Welcome everyone to another week at the Damage Report. I am John Adirola, and if you're joining us for the first time, I want to tell you just a little bit about what this show is about. It is the Damage Report, and that is what we do. We give you a morning report on the true threats that are facing our country and our world. And that can come in a couple of different forms. Sometimes it's information coming out of DC, you know, the day-to-day politics affecting policies of every different sort. But at other times, they're much larger. They're social forces, they're economic forces, things in the environment, things like that. Today, for instance, we're both talking about the president's lawyer's statements over the weekend. We're also gonna be talking about the war in Yemen, our involvement, the US's involvement in that. We're gonna be talking about fracking as well, breaking down polls, a lot of different things like that. But it's not just myself, it's not just the great in-studio guest today. We have Brooke Thomas, journalist, is joining us.
Yay, hi.
We're joined by a number of different awesome guests like Brooke, but we also bring in people from around the country and around the world, experts in the areas of activism, science, politics, journalism, all of that. And so hopefully by watching this program, you will know what is actually going on around the country and what you can do about it. And by the way, if you are tuning in, you don't know, if you just stumbled across this show, you're watching on YouTube TV, you might not know that we actually have a new podcast network on TYT. You can go to tyt.com/audio to check that out. It's also on all of the apps that you might go to for podcasts on both Apple and Android. And by going there, you can listen to tons of TYT content, the most popular shows, and actually starting today, The Damage Report. So under ideal circumstances, you watch it here, you see the video and all of that. But if you can't do that, it will actually be available starting today in podcast form as well. So you can subscribe to The Damage Report there and listen to our podcast and other podcasts. If you like it, you can share it, you can rate it. I have no idea how podcast discoverability works anymore. So anything you can do to help out would be much appreciated. With that said, why don't we get to the news of the day.
All right.
How you doing, by the way?
I'm great, you know.
It's great
Monday,
to have you here.
Thank you.
It's always nice when we, Monday shows are an interesting thing because of course there's a lot that's happened over the weekend. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're gonna be talking about Rudy Giuliani, his views on the truth, what Don McGahn, White House counsel, has been up to over the past couple of months. Like I said, talking about Yemen. And it's always comforting to know that we will be having those hardest days, those Mondays with you.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, I'm glad to have you here as well. So with that, why don't we start by talking about Rudy Giuliani. So he was speaking, he was on the news, and he has an interesting relationship with the concept of truth, of objective reality. And that has come out in a couple of different ways over the past few months. We'll be talking about that. But the most recent one, let's listen.
Look, I'm not going to be rushed into having him testify so that he gets trapped into perjury. And when you tell me that, you know, he should testify because he's going to tell the truth and he shouldn't worry, well, that's so silly because it's somebody's version of the truth, not the truth. He didn't have a conversation.
Truth is truth. I don't mean to go like.
No, it isn't truth. Truth isn't truth. The president of the United States says, I didn't.
Truth isn't truth. Mr. Mayor, do you realize what
No.
This is going to become a bad
Don't do this to me.
Don't do this to me. You might think that he was talking to Chuck Todd. I think he was talking to himself. Don't do this to me.
Right.
So truth isn't truth. Now, look, the immediate context, we'll be talking about multiple rings of context here, but the immediate context there is that he is talking about how if you give Donald Trump more of the benefit of more of the doubt than anyone has ever gotten or deserved in the history of the world, he has a differing idea of what conversation he had with James Comey over a year ago. And so in that, you cannot simply say that there is a truth because apparently it is under dispute. When you first heard his comments over the weekend, what did you think about that?
Do you know, honestly, that he's right. And it's terrible, mm-hmm. but that is where we are. Pizzagate is literally still a thing. Mm-hmm. There are hundreds of thousands of people on social media following that and constantly tweeting and talking about that every day when we know the facts are that is nothing. Mm-hmm. It's not a thing. There's been plenty of things that the president has said that are not true. Mm-hmm. And
which
what
Rudy Giuliani, of course, would not admit to.
Right. He says things himself that are not true. Mm-hmm. Everybody, even, you know, we spent a lot of time talking about Omarosa. She said things that are not true. And now she's pointing out things that other people are saying mm-hmm. that aren't true. It's just, yes. Well, the truth is still always the truth, but lucky for him, we're in the space where nobody cares. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I still think there are a couple of problems. Even when you understand the context, I think there's a few problems here. So I would say the truth is the truth. Yeah. Donald Trump is telling the truth and James Comey's a liar. That's what I would say if I was Rudy Giuliani. if I wasn't part of a movement that was attempting to get people to give up on the concept of truth. So lurking in the background, there's that. But there's more immediate political problems to what he's saying as well. He's saying that James Comey says they have a conversation on the one hand. Donald Trump says they didn't. And so if he goes in there and says that they didn't, that's a perjury trap. That's not how perjury works at all. Unless it's an established fact that the conversation happened or it didn't happen, what you have is two different stories that then have to be investigated. Simply asserting that that James Comey's not honest does not make it perjury. It's perjury if it's a lie and that can be established. And there are potentially ways to do that. It can be complicated when you have sort of he said, but it's not impossible. When they keep saying that it would be a perjury trap, either they don't understand what that actually means, which seems odd considering how often they talk about it, and the fact that Rudy Giuliani is ostensibly a lawyer, or they fully understand that it would be a perjury trap because he would actually be committing perjury.
Right.
He would actually be lying.
This is something normal that Giuliani has been doing. This is the same kind of level as collusion is not a crime. Mm-hmm. So I know that I can't definitively say what would easily say, hey, he's right, this is wrong. Mm-hmm. You would think, yes, you go in and say, Trump's telling the truth, Comey's lying, if that's it. But if that's not it,
yeah,
and you say there are two truths, truth is something, come on.
Yeah.
Or you say, initially I didn't have anything to do with this meeting. Okay, well maybe if I did, here's the thing, that's normal.
Yeah.
It was about adoptions. Well, is it still about adoptions now that we have more official records on it? You know, I think these are normal things. You know, it's all about, he's Kellyanne Conway-ing us.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
for some
perhaps he's
reason,
learned from her over the past year.
Right, people aren't looking at it like that.
Exactly, yes.
They still give him a different benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, I would say she is not the best communicator.
Right.
But still better than him. We have a second bit of audio on this. Okay, why don't we roll that now?
Donald Trump says, I didn't talk about Flynn with Comey. Comey says, you did talk about it. So tell me what the truth is. We have a credibility gap between the two of them. You got to select one or the other. Now, who do you think Mueller's going to select? One of his best friends, Comey, or the president who he has been carrying on a completely wild, crazy,
is it possible,
unorthodox investigation?
Is it possible he makes a conclusion based on who's been more truthful over the years?
They don't want that. And maybe you perhaps can't do that. But I would say if he said in the extended comments, he's going to have to look at who has the more logical explanation. And that is not going to work well for Donald Trump. Because the idea is if James Comey took contemporaneous notes about the conversation at the time, you're going to have to explain why Comey would have lied way back then and then later used it in an investigation, and how that makes more sense than Donald Trump, who has previously, I'm fairly certain, admitted to talking about this with Comey, so it's weird that we're backtracking there, how he would not have tried to pressure James Comey to let Flynn off the hook, when that is entirely consistent with his behavior. So if you really want to break it down to who is making the more logical case as to what actually took place, I mean, you don't even necessarily have to get into a long history of Donald Trump's thousands and thousands of lies over multiple decades. You can simply look at what they're saying, which one actually makes more sense. I think any objective observer knows.
It is just absolutely bizarre that instead of coming in there like, hey, this is the truth, this is what my client says, mm-hmm. this is the truth, bing, bang, boom. It's this discussion of, well, you never know because.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
you must unlearn what you have learned.
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
There's two different stories. Yeah. Sure, but what's your job here? You know what I mean? It's not.
So look, this is an interesting conversation piece, obviously. I care about this because I do care about, on a sort of larger level, about the war against the concept that anything is true or verifiable, that we can actually figure out things about the world. This has been ongoing for a long time, but it's certainly accelerated over the past few years. But also, I think it's important to talk about this because, as we have said many times on this program, they are attempting to sow the ground for when and if Mueller comes out with something, they don't want any of their followers to actually believe it. They don't want them to actually look at the facts that are presented and consider whether they might be true. They're attempting to bias them against that. And that is why we have to fight back against it. And also, we have to understand just really fast the context of what Giuliani is saying. Perhaps this comment, with the context of his interview, makes some sense. But understand, he has previously said, last week he said to Chris Cuomo that facts are not in the eye of the beholder. Then nowadays they are. That facts are sort of up for debate. That it depends on who you are. He also said in May that truth is relative. And that's why he was worried an interview with Mueller's team would be a perjury trap. They may have a different version of the truth than we do. And of course, you probably remember Kellyanne Conway's alternative facts. So understand the larger context to the context. And that makes me very uncomfortable. With that said, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, Don McGahn, White House counsel, has been working with the special investigation. What might come of that? We're going to be talking about that. And then a little bit later on, deadly bombing in Yemen. We wondered about US involvement, and now we actually know. We'll break that down after this. Back to the Damage Report, everybody. I am John Iderola. Brooke Thomas is joining me in studio today.
Hey.
A little bit later on the show, actually, we're going to be lucky to be joined by UK-based author and journalist Lori Penny, who's going to be joining me to talk about her recent article on the phenomenon of Jordan Peterson and why he has so bedazzled, ensorcelled so many young white men. Let's be honest. Not entirely, but for the most part. And a very interesting article, and so I'm excited to talk about her. She's previously been on the TYT Network, and so great to have her back. Before that, though, let's turn now to Don McGahn. And over the weekend, we found out through the New York Times that the White House counsel had apparently cooperated with the Mueller investigation. And he'd cooperated extensively was the word that was used many times. In fact, he had at least 3 voluntary interviews with investigators that totaled 30 hours over the past 9 months. Which, just really fast, 30 hours, I could tell you everything that I know in 30 hours. And they talked to him about what Donald Trump has done in terms of potential obstruction of justice, talking about the Russia investigation, about Robert Mueller and all of that, and 30 hours. So McGahn was apparently able to, I'll go back to the graphic now, was apparently able to describe the president's fury towards the Russia investigation, which I can understand why you wouldn't understand if you didn't have Twitter. Otherwise, you should already know about that. But he also provided the investigators examining whether Mr. Trump obstructed justice a clear view of the president's most intimate moments with his lawyer. Now, the interesting thing is that while this has perhaps been the largest story of the weekend, it was covered extensively. It's the big story coming in this week. That's why we're covering it. What's interesting is both what we don't know, which is that we don't know anything specific that McGahn actually said to the investigators, but we also do know that McGahn apparently cautioned to investigators that he never saw Mr. Trump go beyond his legal authorities, though the limits of executive power are murky. So the way that this has been pitched is that Don McGahn is worried that Donald Trump might throw him under the bus if the worst happens. And so Don McGahn wants to protect himself, but he also, at least in these initial reports, appears to be protecting Donald Trump, at least saying, I don't believe he's overstepped his bounds. Now, it could be the case that he is presenting evidence that Donald Trump has overstepped his bounds, but he's saying he hasn't so that he doesn't appear disloyal. But all of this is speculation because we still have very little actual information.
Right, that's the weird space that we're in. We do know that he said a lot because that's a long time, but we have no idea.
That's like an audiobook of a Game of Thrones novel right there.
Or what he even knows, unless Omarosa was in the room.
Yes, then we will get the tape inevitably.
We'll find out.
She's one of those Amazon pens. And it's been interesting over the past 48 hours to see how the president has reacted to this. So we have, this is just this morning's a few tweets about it. He tweeted all weekend about it. He said this, disgraced and discredited Bob Mueller. Remember when he didn't actually talk about Mueller by name? And his whole group of angry Democrat thugs spent over 30 hours with the White House counsel, spelled incorrectly, only with my approval for purposes of transparency. Anybody needing that much time when they know there is no Russian collusion capitalized is just someone looking for trouble. They're enjoying ruining people's lives and refuse to look at the real corruption on the Democrat side, the lies, the firings, the deleted emails, and so much more. Mueller's angry Dems are looking to impact the election. They are a national disgrace capitalized. As always, there's a lot there.
Right, and it's just generally, what does this have to do with anything that we're talking about right now?
So his message is that I wanted him to do this for transparency, but everything else about this communication implies that he is not happy about the news that he has heard.
It's deflect, deflect, deflect. And honestly, I'm tired of that. I'm tired of not getting straight answers from anyone when asked a question. I'm tired of everything being flipped and pushed over to Hillary, her emails, and the Democrats.
Yeah, he's still doing it. I mean, it works. There's a percentage of the population that just wants to keep,
you know, nobody cares.
Like people, some people like hearing the classics.
Right.
But yeah, I will go further. I'm sick of the entire thing. I just want to know what's going to happen. I'm just like, I feel like at a certain point, like you've read so many books in this series, you just want to see how they wrap it up.
Right, you're a little numb to it. You don't really expect much, honestly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, but I will say that does not mean that we are not going to cover developments in the story. Okay. I think that it is important. I'm not one of the people that thinks it's one of like the driving forces behind people's electoral activity or anything like that. But it is important. The question of whether the president and his associates broke the law is fundamental to a democracy. And so we do have a responsibility to cover it in a responsible fashion. That said, I mean, his reaction here, how many times can we go back and forth with, I didn't commit collusion, collusion's not a crime. Oh, also Hillary and them, they committed collusion, which is totally a crime and they should go to jail.
But collusion,
I just love that quick back and forth there.
And also, I allowed him to do this. He had my total blessing because we don't have anything to hide, but I'm angry that he had to, what?
Yeah, and also, look, I had him talk for purposes of transparency. Oh, will I talk to Mueller? No. We're going to put that. We've been putting that up for months. We're going to continue to forget transparency when it comes to that. Anyway, it is possible that we'll know a little bit more about what Don McGahn said at some point. It's also possible that we will never know, or that it will take until this event, this thing is eventually wrapped up. And I know there's been a great deal of pressure from the White House to wrap this up before the election. They're saying because they don't want it to affect the election. I would say wrapping it up immediately before the election is a great way to affect the election. I think they just want to move past it, which is great. I like wishful thinking as much as the next guy, but I don't think that Mueller's team is necessarily going to care too much about the timetable that Rudy Giuliani and Donald Trump want to work on.
I agree.
Anyway, let's move now to an extremely important update to a story that we talked about not too long ago. Now, there was a bombing at a marketplace in Yemen. A school bus was struck by a bomb. You're seeing there the locations. And look, we talked about this at the time. Absolutely tragic airstrike. 51 people died, 40 of them children. There has been footage and photographs from the site. It is as horrendous a set of visuals as you will ever see. And since then, there has been renewed interest in understanding what the US's role in these sorts of attack is. Now, we understand that we have sold weapons to Saudi Arabia, who is engaged in these airstrikes and bombings against Yemen. We also know that we provide various forms of command and control and aerial refueling and things of that sort. But we now know that in this particular bombing, our involvement was about as direct as it can be. Working with local Yemeni journalists and munitions experts, CNN has established that the weapon that left dozens of children dead on August 9th was a 500-pound laser-guided MK-82 bomb made by Lockheed Martin, which is, of course, a US defense contractor, which means these were US weapons that were sold to Saudi Arabia and used to slaughter dozens of children.
And this, the initial reaction, the initial kind of government reaction is, listen, yes, we sell these materials, but we don't have any, you know, rules in place to say this is what you can or can't do with them, or this is what you should do with them. And my reaction is, right, understand that. That's why the president, before your president, said we shouldn't be doing this anymore.
So let's talk about that, actually. So there was another absolutely horrendous attack back in October of 2016 where a funeral hall was struck, killing 155 people. One of the worst imaginable events. And there was at least some action as a result of that. So at that point, US President Barack Obama banned the sale of precision guided military technology to Saudi Arabia over human rights concerns. So here's the thing. I have made approximately 79 videos criticizing Barack Obama's policies of drone strikes, his continued involvement in a variety of different wars, the deaths that have come about as a result of that, including a great deal of civilian deaths in Iraq, in Syria, a number of other countries. This, however, was a good move. And I understand some people want to say that everything is the same and the truth isn't truth or whatever. But he did ban that type of weaponry. They still sold plenty of weapons to Saudi Arabia, billions and billions of dollars, but he did ban it. That ban was overturned by Secretary Rex Tillerson in March 2017. And in the same way that in the latter years of Obama's administration, they scaled back some of the rules of engagement for drone strikes. And by that, I mean that they stopped some of the drone strikes. That also was taken away when Donald Trump got back in office. And that is why you saw skyrocketing civilian casualties in Syria over that first year. So understand that there can be bad and there can be bad. Sometimes one is worse than the other.
Right. But we don't have control over what they use and how they use it is not an appropriate or acceptable answer when there was a policy in place that would have controlled that.
100%.
So.
And it's also disingenuous.
Right.
We don't have control over what they do with those weapons once we sell them. We do have control over their ability to use the weapons in the first place if we don't sell them to them.
Right.
So that's one way to take some direct control if we chose to and if we were willing to deal with Lockheed Martin and other defense contractors being a little bit frustrated for a while. Okay, that said, we are going to take another break. When we come back, Donald Trump is now claiming that his support amongst the African American population is skyrocketing. We'll look at the facts behind that. And then fracking, disastrous for a number of different reasons. One aspect of that is getting a lot worse year by year. We'll give you those facts when we come back from this break. Welcome back to the show, everyone. Let's turn now to some polling news. So, Burke, I don't know if you know, did you know that Donald Trump's support amongst the African American population is just
the
skyrocketing?
The blacks love him.
Hey,
that's how he would say it. Right, right, right.
Yes, so Rasmussen, which is technically a pollster, they put this out, this tweet. This is from a few days ago. Today, real Donald Trump's approval ratings amongst black voters, 36%. This day last year, 19%, which is, I mean, that's pretty amazing that it would double over just a year. I mean, African American, the population doesn't generally love Republican presidents to begin with. He has been a particularly aggressive one when it comes to issues of race.
He's been racial, isn't
that
what?
He's been racialist, or my favorite is racially conservative.
Yeah, okay.
I just love it.
He's been racial.
So that's odd. Turns out it's also not true.
Right.
It's not 36% Rasmussen. Now look, every pollster does things in a little bit of a different way. How they put together a sample can be different. And that is why certain pollsters tend to be more accurate over long periods of time than others. Now, Rasmussen is known for having an electoral slant towards Republican candidates. Any poll in terms of approval rating or before an election is going to tend to be more favorable towards the Republican than other pollsters, which I would label as thus inaccurate. But this seems, even aside from this, this seems like them going out of their way to attempt to give good news to the president. And by the way, the president and Sarah Huckabee Sanders and Breitbart and Drudge and all of them were trumpeting this as proof that his policies are working, his rhetoric isn't so bad, and these people like him. They really like him.
The fact that 36% is terrible anyway.
Yes.
So before we even get to break down how it's not even 36%,
mm-hmm.
the fact that things are so bad
yes.
that you would be just openly and overwhelmingly celebrating a 36%
yeah.
approval rate along, like, you know, race lines mm-hmm. is ridiculous to yeah. begin with.
So why don't we get into the other numbers? Because of course, turns out multiple polling outfits ask about this sort of topic.
Right.
So let's bring up Gallup's tracking poll over a long period of time. The weeks in office, it is consistent and low. It's 13% on his five. It's been 555 days. Feels more like 666. But yeah, 13%. Which is maybe, that's higher. Look, admittedly, that's higher than I would have predicted. But now, 36. Now, we also have amongst YouGov economist surveys, there's been several. In July and August, that had him at 13% as well. 4 Quinnipiac surveys had him at 9% over the past 2 months. Polling firm Civics, which has interviewed more than 140,000 respondents over the past year, suggests that Trump's black approval rating has consistently been in the single digits throughout his presidency. By the way, so we had prepared to talk about this on Friday. There's been other polls since then confirming, again, it is somewhere between 8 and 12 or 13%. They don't care. They,
no.
Of course, don't care. It was nice to have this Rasmussen one. It's nice when Donald Trump Jr. photoshops an approval rating poll from Fox and puts it on his Instagram. They don't actually care. And one of the things that makes me, I hate this discussion all the more when they lead it, because if you talk about his approval rating amongst black voters or why it might be low, even hypothetically, what is the one thing that Sarah Huckabee Sanders or Donald Trump will say? Do you know?
No.
The black unemployment rate is really low.
Oh, right,
really
that I stepped into. That I stepped into, and it's just floating at the same rate.
Yeah, I love, you can see the chart month by month, or maybe quarter by quarter. I think it's month by month. And it's going down year after year over Barack Obama's presidency, and then he becomes president, and it continues. Which, look, it is nice. Perhaps it is proof that Donald Trump is not a racist, that he did not single-handedly do whatever it takes to raise the black unemployment rate again.
Right.
The historical trend has continued. Huzzah, President Trump.
There's just been so many things. And she is, you know, obviously she speaks for him. But it's frustrating when she doesn't tell the truth. And she doesn't tell the truth in so many different ways. That, and then you have this and it's like, are they telling the truth? Like, you know what I mean? And this is, it's bothersome because, yes, the way he referred to countries full of dark brown people. The way, I think I saw like a pie chart of that many times the president has referred to people as animals, and then they split that up among racial lines. Like, it's just.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
This
but that is interesting. Yeah, well, I mean, we understand. And thankfully for the president, we have lower standards for the president than we do for hosts of Roseanne. So he has survived thus far.
It's just, referring to black people constantly as dumb and pretending, like, we have to pretend like that's not an old racist trope. Like, we have to pretend like. Referring to black people as animals is not an old racist trope. Like, we have to and completely ignore everything that happened before he was in office because rappers like to hang around with him.
Yeah. But no, if there's an outspoken black activist or celebrity or athlete, he will inevitably call the person dumb regardless of what they do.
And like, you don't even have Omarosa on your team anymore. Right now, we've got Diamond, Silk, Candace Owens, and Pastor Daryl Scott.
Oh, but there was an aide working in the
Percy
East Wing.
With the hair.
Yes. It's got Diamond Silk still. I think they're going to stick with him.
What?
I think.
Yes.
But we also know as much as he loves attacking people of color, he also loves attacking women. So God help you if he ever sees some of your critical words against him.
Right.
He will go on a tirade. Now, let's turn to one more topic in our news block. Fracking. It's a disastrous technology. It is becoming more common. It is quite cheap thanks to subsidizing that happens from the government. But it's also really bad in a number of different ways. Some even seem a bit comical. Like, we've talked previously about in Oklahoma, the drastic rise in the number of earthquakes that they were having after fracking became more common. You've probably seen the video of people setting their water on fire, their tap water. Mm-hmm. And so the problem there is that hydraulic fracturing, which requires pumping great amounts of water into the ground to break apart all of these different cavities to release natural gas and, you know, eventually be sucked up, that leaves a lot of toxic chemicals and various things in the water that can leach into groundwater. That's what causes poisoning of people. And it's becoming more common. So these huge volumes of wastewater that have cancer-causing chemicals, salts, naturally occurring radioactive material, those are becoming more common. In fact, fracking companies use 770% more water per well in 2016 than in 2011 across all of the US's major gas and oil producing regions. Now, that is an average. There were some that used up to 1,440% more water over just a half a decade. I don't know exactly why that is. Perhaps they've found ways to, in their minds, control it more. They think that they can produce, they can get more output from the wells by using more water. But if the water is a bad thing, and we know that it is, using 1,440% more of it seems like a worse thing.
What's so frustrating about all of this is that the federal government seems to think that, just leave it up to states to regulate it. Mm-hmm. We have this entire department dedicated to protecting our environment, because as humans, we need our environment to be protected. But I'll just leave it up to, we'll leave it up to the states.
Yeah, and look.
So then the states are wilding out.
Mm-hmm. Well, the states go crazy. And what's interesting is that, as you point out, you have the federal government saying the states can take care of it. And then inside of the states, you have all of these individual areas, mm-hmm. towns and locales and things like that, that say, hey, this is terrible. We don't want fracking anymore. And then the states say, that's cute. You're not allowed to ban fracking in your area. So very different standards depending on what level of government you're working at. And in the meantime, people are being poisoned. And it's not like the fracking company executives are, they're drinking some of their water and thinking, this doesn't taste right. No, it's just regular people living in the area. The fact that they can't ban it and then they have to suffer the health problems, the economic problems, obviously, is absolutely absurd. And the fact that fracking has not become less common with all that we now know about it, the great deal of activism that's happened over the past 5 or so years, all of that, and it is still so common. That is incredibly frustrating.
Nothing has been more important than making these companies money. Mm-hmm. And that's frustrating.
And they're still making the money.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take another break. When we come back, journalist, author Lori Penny will join us. We're going to be talking about Jordan Peterson, the new god of young white conservative males, after this. It's become objectively clear, I think, that men have a problem. Young men have a number of different issues that we have been ill-served to deal with on our own. And so it has left a question, who is going to fix young men in America? And there is a guy who has stepped up and has made a great deal of money attempting to talk to these men, write for these men, deliver YouTube debates for these men. That is Jordan Peterson, the professor of psychology, technically. And I have not actually consumed much of his work, I'm going to be honest. And so I'm lucky to be joined now on the Damage Report by Lori Penny, a journalist and author, most recently of Bitch Doctrine, Essays for Dissenting Adults, whose work has appeared in The Guardian, Time Magazine, BuzzFeed, The New York Times, Vice, and basically everywhere. Welcome to the show.
Oh, hello, how are you?
I'm good, and I'm very glad to have you here. So I very much enjoyed your recent article. It's on Long Reads about Jordan Peterson and your dissection of his movement. And so I wanted to ask you first, you have a quote in the article, if every generation gets the intellectuals it deserves, we're in serious trouble. And I have felt that for some time. Why have we ended up with people like Jordan Peterson exploding online?
Well, the first thing you've got to say about Peterson's, particularly his latest book, is that it kind of undermines its own premise by merely existing, because the whole idea, well, part of the idea is that it's, oh, you know, men rise to the top because of meritocracy, you know, men, that was surprise Jordan Peterson, he just appeared on my screen.
He cut into mansplain over you, I apologize.
The idea that, you know, men rise to the top because, you know, their ideas are just the most brilliant and they're the strongest and the best. And it's not, you know, gender inequality or centuries of structural oppression. It's, you know, it's just the way the world works. This book is a real mess. 12 Rules for Life. It's not that it's objectively wrong. That's the second issue. It makes no sense. Like, if you sit down and read it, and I've done that twice because I hate myself and, you know, I don't have anything to do with this. It is this weird, weird sort of trippy logic. And, you know, buried in there is about a third of a decent self-help book.
Yes. And I
like to read self-help books because, you know, as previously mentioned, I hate myself. I don't actually. Because I read self-help books, and some of them have quite, you know, some of them have quite interesting things to say, useful things to say, even though they're wrapped up in that fluffy self-actualizing language. And most of the things that are actually useful tips in Jordan Peterson come from these books. You know, you can read all this in The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, which is actually quite a good book, even though it was written by a Mormon who doesn't mention it.
Yes. So I want to cut to one of my core concerns as an outsider to his work. I have not read his books. I haven't consumed much of his material, and I don't go to the darkest sections of Reddit, so I don't come across them very often. And some of his fans will probably watch this video, and they'll think, why is this guy being so aggressive towards him? Now, there are some people, I think, that are dismissive of people like Jordan Peterson. I would say that I'm more aggressive because I actually care about men coming to grips with these.
Yeah.
Their feelings, and I feel like there's a great opportunity cost to them being deceived. But
there's a huge hunger. And actually, one of the things that happened after I wrote that piece is a lot of people reached out to me, and a lot of men reached out to me and said, thank you so much, because, you know, you, and you know, there have been lots of good dissections of his work. You know, thank you for, like, you know, taking the scales from my eyes, because this was, I was getting recruited. Mm-hmm. I don't think Peterson is actively seeking to recruit young men to a kind of misogynist, racist, neo-nationalist fantasy, but he, you know, willing or no, he provides an entry point, because people go from, you know, the Peterson rabbit hole and all the kind of weird YouTube videos about the slaying the great mother dragon by symbolically tied in your bedroom, but then they go down the darker route. And Peterson is not a fascist, or, and much as I love to call everyone a fascist because it's so good to say, you know, Peterson's not a fascist. He just, you know, provides an entry point for people who are attracted to that, I don't know, that sense of restored pride. Yes. That's what he gives them. He's, I mean, look, everybody who engages with media and ideas has some kind of superpower based on who they are. And it's often related to race and gender and class, but sometimes it just comes from, so Peterson seems to have this sort of miasma of authority. Mm-hmm. Now, what he can literally read the phone book. And if you read the transcripts of what he writes, it is, I mean, look, I've read them several times. They're on his website. It's a lot of, it sounds like the Book of Revelation as, you know, funneled through an acid filter. At least that's what it sounds like to me. Honestly, I can't tell the difference between this and, you know, some of what my university friends used to come up with of really weird late nights smoking weed and, you know, ranting about literary theory. But it sounds sort of authoritative. It sounds like, you know, there must be something here, and, you know, it sounds prideful, and there's some vague stuff about restoring, you know, a real idea of masculinity and honor, and, you know, and quite old-fashioned in some ways, but also, you know, the idea that women are, you know, the agent of chaos, and, you know, all the bad things that come from chaos are symbolically feminine, and you have to, you know, conquer the symbolic feminine, which is also the chaos. I don't know. It doesn't make sense. I'm trying. We shouldn't engage with it as if there's a coherent internal ideology, because there isn't. But that incoherence is sort of the problem.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's possible that he doesn't pay that much more attention to his work than some other people do. But I want to ask you a question, I think, to sort of cut to, I want to give the best, I want to be fair. So he is in some way a self-help sort of guy. He is laying out a sort of philosophical and in some cases practical guide to how you can improve yourself, you know, and that's in competition with any number of others. Is there, in your writing, in your writings, in your research, is there any evidence that the men who read his books, who consume his material and actually enjoy it, these are not the people who flee, these are the people who actually like it, are they improving their lives through this?
Well, I'm not sure that's the most important question. I think there are some real people. I think there are people who have been, who have felt more confident and less hopeless because of this. But I think we need to look, I think at the moment the entire world is captured and has been for some time by the idea that any ideology and any set of ideas is okay as long as it helps men get over their hurt feelings. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that's what we need to get beyond. You know, I don't think the fact that I genuinely believe, I would be surprised if people haven't in some way, you know, got their lives in more order after, you know, reading Jordan Peterson telling them to tidy their room. I am actually a real fan of tidy your room philosophy, you know, making your bed every day. I literally do that. I've been doing that for 5 years. It comes from Gretchen Rubin. But look, it's I don't think that's worth it. Is it worth it? If, look, you know, men elected Donald Trump to make themselves feel a bit better. Mm-hmm. Is that worth it? They probably do feel better. Yeah. You know, some of them.
Yeah, I should be clear. I'm not saying that I think that it would justify. It's just that in my, like, bit of reading and, like, forum posts, very often the people of these sorts of movements, they don't really seem to be happier. They still seem to be quite angry and frustrated. And it seems almost like there's a sort of I guess, like, sort of a familiar thing to having a group where you can dwell in the same sort of resentment. And they seem to like that, I think. I'm not saying that's for this movement, but others perhaps.
Yeah, I think it doesn't last long, this sort of Kate Mann, who is the greatest feminist philosopher of her generation, wrote in the Times Literary Supplement that Peterson's work is a sort of short-term analgesic, mm-hmm. it's a temporary painkiller, and it's not going to make people feel better about the underlying problem, which is that men and young men in particular are angry at perceived loss of status and feel hopeless and dejected and feel that the world owes them things and women owe them things and they're not being given the things that they owe, and the idea that they might actually have to change the way they're thinking about, among other things, women and sexuality, that's not offered. So I don't think it's not a long-term solution. Although the bits about, you know, taking basic care of yourself, that helps. That's, you know, as a feminist, I wish more men would do that, because then I wouldn't have to do it.
As a man, I wish more men did. Now, of course, you did not owe us any of your time, but I appreciate you giving me your time and lending your expertise in this area. This has been Lori Penny, author of Bitch Doctrine, Essays for Dissenting Adults, whose work is supported at patreon.com/LoriPenny. Lori, thank you for joining the Damage Report.
Thanks very much. Bye.
We're going to take one more break. When we come back, Sacha Baron Cohen, is he being unfair to Americans? After this. We have but moments remaining, and I want to turn now to comedy and just acknowledge that the news came out over the weekend that Michelle Wolf's show, The Break, was canceled on Netflix after just 10 episodes, which I find to be completely unnecessary and far premature. I thought it was a very funny, a very witty show, unique in its presentation, perhaps too unique, I suppose, for some people. But it is unfortunate that it wasn't given more time to develop, because I very much did appreciate it over the past few months. So hopefully she will end up somewhere, perhaps with a form of that show.
Netflix has to figure out how to make that format work.
I would say give it 4 months,
yeah,
before you kill it. Maybe do a little bit of research, modify a few things. But we do have other comedians as well. Sacha Baron Cohen back.
His show's not getting canceled.
Well, we'll see. He's back. Let's take a look at what he was able to dredge up in his most recent episode.
OMG, oh, I am Fizzy Fireworks. I do not know how to tie my shoelaces, but please, can I have a semi-automatic gun? I think I would be very good at shooting people.
A certain kind of machine gun you can. Certain machine guns are off grounds. Yeah, not to be, though. How old are you?
Me, I'm 21, but I've got the mental age of 3.
But the majority of people aren't mentally ill, and they're not running around.
Oh, I'm not mentally ill. I just want to ethnically cleanse all the limited edition Shopkins.
Well, that's crazy.
Oh, but can I still buy a machine gun, please?
Yes, you can.
So in Jan Burrow's defense, she said that's crazy, which many of his other guests probably wouldn't have.
She should have started with that, though.
Yes, she did, however, say that some forms of machine guns should be legal. So she is on the record, perhaps this doesn't shock anyone, that you should have a machine gun. So I would say, I don't know if you watched the most recent episode. He had Jan Brewer on, he had Jill Stein on, and these were not cases where he really got people to say. I mean, Jan Brewer had that one comment. Jill Stein kept referring to herself as a scientist, which I think technically she's a doctor, not a scientist, but that's the best. So this was one of the weaker episodes. But the point I wanted to ask you about was Salon had an argument where apparently the defense of a lot of the people who've been caught by Sacha Baron Cohen is that what he's doing is not actually revealing what they truly believe, their actual self. It's that he's taking advantage of Americans' politeness.
Which is absolutely ridiculous, because where do you think he got this list from? This list of people to talk to. You know where? Public, ridiculous statements they have mm-hmm. made on the record, totally free while at work. Mm-hmm. That's what she talks like. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. That was really herself.
It wasn't like he just, okay, I'm just gonna pick a bunch of random politicians and we'll see what we can get. No, he's like, this is probably what they'll say. This will be a good, you know, segment for her, for him, because.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, and he has picked people that apparently are not alerted to the fact that something might be up by ridiculous looking caricatures of humans.
Yeah.
And again, like, it may be easy for some, like Jan Brewer might say, well, you know, I went along with it, I was trying to do something hip or whatever. But the people who are running around with their pants down around their ankles, or, you know, talking about doing upskirt photos of women in burkas, Like, those people are not doing that to be polite. That goes beyond any American politeness, even in the South or whatever.
And I'm sorry.
This is what they really like. So that defense seems quite weak.
I was trying to be polite by telling a toy he could have a machine gun.
Mm-hmm.
Right, I'm just trying to be polite.
That's way too small to even lift one.
Our Pio, have you heard him speak at all, ever?
Yeah, yeah. And
it could literally just be that show, just sound bites of him.
And these are quotes that being added on to actions as well. Yeah. Anyway, we do have to go. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you on tomorrow morning's episode. To hear even more about both this topic and other issues not being covered nearly enough by the mainstream media, you're going to want to tune in every morning to our full hour-long show. That's at 12 p.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, available on the TYT Network channel on YouTube TV.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.